I'm so sorry. I know you listen to a podcast, but I've sort of poked my head in to plug mine. It's called James Veitch's Contractual Obligation, and it's sort of a think piece sprinkled throughout with high-octane bursts of investigative journalism. I mean, it's not really, but you know, they only gave me 20 seconds, so what can you do? Subscribe to James Veitch's Contractual Obligation on BBC Sounds. Terms and conditions apply. All right, back to whatever you were listening to.
Dead Ringers, the end of decade special.
Hello, I'm Nick Robinson, the human roll-on deodorant.
Which is handy, as I'm Emily Maitlis, the woman who makes middle-aged men sweat.
As this decade comes to a close, we're going to be looking back on the 2010s.
So the decade began with one royal arse, Pippa's bum at Kate and Will's wedding.
And ended with another, Prince Andrew being interviewed by Emily on BBC Two. Amazingly enough, he then agreed to do a second interview, which has recently come to light.
For the purposes of the tape, present at this interview are Superintendent Ted Hastings, Detective Inspector Kate Fleming, DS Steve Arnott, and His Royal Highness Prince Andrew Albert Christian Edward. Duke of York, Earl of Inverness, Knight Companion of the Most Noble Order of the Garter, Patron of Pizza Express Woking.
Sit yourself down there, fella. You're going to be spending a long time behind bars, and I'm not talking about tramp.
Surely one has the right to be interviewed by a royal of at least one rank higher.
Is she here?
Yeah, she's here, Cove. Bring her in, Steve.
Sure thing. Hold my tizer.
You're in deep shit now, young man. One is here to shoot grouse and kick ass, and one's all out of grouse.
For the benefit of the tape, Her Majesty the Queen has entered the room.
I'm going to do you and your nonce mate. You've wrecked this decade for your mum. Kate being with child, yay! Meghan being with child, yay! You being with child, good grief! So, Mr. Windsor, do you recognise this?
For the benefit of the tape, Her Majesty is showing Prince Andrew a Pizza Express menu.
Yes, I recognise it. I attended a children's party there, so I couldn't have gone to tramps.
Children's parties are at 3 p.m, you muppet. This joker's wasting my time. You know you're guilty, and you know what's going to happen to you. Nothing. You're a member of the royal family. You'll live a life of opulent splendour, just as you did before.
Can I too?
No, you die in a car crash in Series 7.
It's time to determine exactly who was to blame for the deplorable decade which is about to pass into history. Our search for answers begins back in 2010.
2010 now seems a quite alien place to us. There was no Netflix and chill.
Only BBC Four and Snore. And strangest of all, Nick Clegg was popular. As the Tories were in power for almost all of the 10 years, logic dictates that the decade was their fault. But as we're the BBC, let's ignore that and just focus on the Labour Party instead. Could they be responsible for the fire dumpster decade? We sent the BBC's geekiest reporter to find out.
Hello, I'm Louis Theroux. Famous for putting weirdos at their ease by being slightly more weird. I'm standing in a hideaway, uncomfortably close to someone, hoping they'll snap and start shouting at me so that I can look crestfallen.
Look, will you go away? Go away, your nerdy presence is ruining my rugged reputation.
Look, Ed, can I call you Ed? I just want to know, was it you who ruined the decade? Can I ask you that? Is that something I can ask? Is that all right? Can I do that?
Yes, it's okay. Of course it was me. I deliberately ate that bacon sandwich knowing that it would mean I'd lose. David Cameron would get a majority and have to call a referendum to placate his party and tear the country in two. It was me.
But why did you do that? Can I ask that? Is that all right? Do you mind if I ask you that? Can I do that?
It all goes back to a terrible moment in my childhood. I once bought a Kinder Surprise and guessed that there'd be a Ninja Turtle inside. And when I opened it, that's what it was. So there was no surprise. I had a Kinder Surprise with no surprise. You'll never recover from that.
It was later discovered that Ed Miliband never bought that Kinder Surprise and was just lying to make himself seem important.
Early in the decade, the Labour Party was rocked by a sad event, which was marked by this special edition of This Week.
Hello, I'm Andrew Neil. That bag of satsumas from last Christmas you found in the back of the cupboard at Easter. Joining me later is an angry pigeon called Keith, the secret vampire emperor of Chad, an occasional table that's come up with a cure for scrofula, and Diane Abbott!
Andrew. Your tone is not seemly. This is a sad and tragic day. For today, we bid farewell to Michael Foot, a colossus of the labour movement, and a hero to those craftsmen who dedicated their lives to making the perfect ill-fitting donkey jacket.
Yes, we will never see his like again.
No, Andrew, no, you are wrong.
I'm sorry, I don't follow.
Among the Labour Party, Michael Foot was a higher being, the socialist equivalent of a Jedi Master. He was our Yoda, small, shriveled, and completely unable to stop the evil Empire. At the moment of his death, he is able to project his force ghost into another being. See, see, here he comes. His spirit form floats among us.
He's going over there to that shriveled, grey-haired old man slumped by the door.
I have been reborn. I have taken the form of this utterly useless backbencher, and now I will make him into an utterly useless party leader.
He's taken over my Jeremy. Well, that's amazing. I never thought Jeremy could get any more potent, but now I know he's possessed by Michael Foot. I can barely restrain myself.
I have in me a manifesto that will make the longest suicide note in history look like a Harry Potter novel.
Even if that's true, Mr. Corbyn, I still don't think you'll ever be as shambolically inept.
And I will make Diane Abbott my shadow Home Secretary.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong.
As the decade angrily careered onwards, 2011 saw unrest on London streets.
At first, the fighting was thought to have been instigated by an angry mob.
But it was later discovered that the riots were started by the Kaiser Chiefs, as they'd grown sick of predicting riots that never happened.
London's then mayor, Boris Johnson, whatever happened to him, was quickly on the scene.
I say, you ruffians, you rapscallions, stop what you're doing right now.
Why should we?
Yeah, bugger off!
I will not let you throw that plastic chair through that restaurant window when you could be throwing this antique chaise long through it instead. I take it from an old pro, us Bullingdon Club boys were smashing up restaurants when you two were in nappies. Well, actually, I was in a nappy too, to win a bet with Dropsy. Come on, don't be shy. Give it some welly. Cripes, it's the Rozzers. No, wait, it can't be the pigs. I've closed down all the police stations. Yeah, that means only one thing. Are you ladies in police uniform strippers by any chance?
Yes.
Why? How would you like a £120,000 government contract to provide me with some technology lessons?
No, you're talking.
Hurrah! I love being mayor. Right, last one to nick a flat-screen TV is a pickaninny. Fwah!
one word summed up the early part of this fractious decade, and it, of course, was Fenton! Fenton! Fenton!
Yes, the clip of Fenton the dog went viral.
Overnight, Fenton was a social media sensation. In 2012, Fenton moved to LA to star in a big-budget Hollywood remake of The Littlest Hobo alongside Cameron Diaz, and was briefly romantically linked to Kim Kardashian and Kelly Osbourne.
I don't want your little friend in here, Kelly, pissing and shitting all over me best carpet.
Fenton's not here, Ozzy!
Oh, crap. What have I done, Sharon? Not again.
You're listening to a special retrospective on the 2010s. It was a very mixed decade for the England football team.
As England manager and owl in chief, I simply couldn't be prouder of myself. Previous England managers have only guided us to humiliating defeats against the likes of Germany or Portugal. But Iceland, a country that has no professional players, plays its home games on the deck of a herring trawler and chooses its team in a smorgasbord raffle. Move over, Graham Taylor. There's a new turnip in town.
But the mood in the England camp was about to change. Gary Lineker takes up the story.
Yeah, soon after the Iceland defeat, new manager Gareth Southgate did something we've never seen before. He made the England team actually likeable. The loveliest of the lot, Captain Harry Kane, joins me now.
Yeah, cheers, Gary. being adored by the public, charming the fans with adorable bants on the team Snapchat, letting school kids sign my massive chin. It's been a dream come true, really.
That's not the England way. These are England fans. They don't want lovable icons. They want punch-ups, casual xenophobia, adulterous hotel spit roasts.
OK, fair enough. To be given a chance to wrap a deck chair around a Spaniard's bonce, then sing 10 German bombers in a local boulangerie, it's a dream come true, really.
In 2013, the Catholic Church was rocked when the Pope announced he was retiring.
To spend more time with his family. And this was also the year that Foreign Secretary William Hague backed a number of initiatives to alleviate world hunger, working very closely with Angelina Jolie in her capacity as a UN ambassador and the world's poutiest woman. But when Angelina subsequently split from Brad Pitt, the rumour mill was abuzz. This secret recording of the two emerged.
Oh, Angelina. I never meant for this to happen. You have to see sense. You have Brad Pitt waiting for you at home.
Brad is nothing to me. He is nothing.
He was good in 12 Monkeys.
William, I want us to grow old together, raising ferrets on Ilkley Moor.
It'll never work, Angelina, you and me. You're just a humble movie star. I'm a glamorous Tory MP with a whirlwind lifestyle. If I'm not at Alton Towers, I'm wrestling with Liam Fox in front of an open fire or helping David Cameron procure sentient bacon for his sick fantasies.
I will never get over you, William Hague. I will eat nothing from now on. I will waste away to nothing.
You never ate anything anyway, Ange. If I'm honest, I only dated you so I could eat your chips.
Then this is goodbye. Please, William, make me scream one last time, you gorgeous hunk of Yorkshire pound cake.
All right, then. But this is the last time. And after this, we are never riding down a hill in a tin bath together ever again.
In 2014, something momentous happened. The BBC aired an edition of Question Time that Nigel Farage wasn't on.
Hello and welcome to Question Time, assisted suicide through political debate. On the panel tonight, someone from Labour, who cares, some Tory, whatever. Oh, what's the point? It's just not the same without my Nigel. I need my Farage, don't you understand? In the last 18 months, Farage has appeared on this show 53 times. That's two more than me. No Farage on Question Time means the end of days. It's like the ravens leaving the tower. If the ravens were really annoying and always pissed. We've opened a portal into hell. Where is my Farage?
Where indeed? Well, since that programme aired, there have been many...
No, no, no! Stop right there. Nick, Emily, if you're looking for someone to take credit for this wonderful Brexity decade, then look no further. Let me take you back to the start. Well, it was me, Roger, Scabby, Monkey Nuts and Fat Brian. We were smashing the pasty out of a crate of London Pride when Roger's cousin, Stinky Baz, said, "Bet you can't convince that dog walker that you're running to be the local MP." So off I went. "Mate, I'm running for government. Can I count on your vote?" He asked my policies. I made up some middle-of-the-road, inoffensive stuff. Twice weekly bin collections, bring back the guillotine, concentration camps for hoodies, that sort of thing. And it all just snowballed from there into me becoming the most influential politician in modern British history. Lol.
So you based an entire career on a drunken bet?
Of course. Everything's booze-based. How did you become a journo?
12 Sambucas and a bet with Koonsberg.
Mateless?
A bucket of Mai Tai and a car park fight with Peston.
See, it's all just a laugh. A muckabout. Right, I'm off. Stinky Baz has just texted saying, "Bet you can't persuade Donald Trump to nuke Cornwall." A bet's a bet. Ta-ra!
The frightful decade did have some glimmers of hope.
For example, it was widely expected to be the one in which America elected its first female president.
Hillary Clinton's opponent was billionaire simpleton Donald J. Trump. The moment many people believe Hillary lost the presidency was during the second televised debate.
"We all know that Trump is Putin's puppet."
"That is such a big lie." "Fake news, not great."
"Your supporters are deplorable."
Yes, it was Hillary's use of the word deplorable which horrified America, as it had more than two syllables.
Donald Trump's foreign policy seemed to consist of him trying to woo a series of dictators, like a bad episode of Love Island.
I feel like a proper melt after Vladimir pied me off. Kim Jong's 100% my type on paper, and we had vibes, you know. But then he turns around and says it was all just bants. So bants. Then that Chinese hottie turns up, and I was like, he's such a pang sword. I was like, oh, my days. So I grafted hard, tried to get his attention by showing him my assets and starting a massive trade war, and now he's all aggy. Anyway, not gonna lie, it is what it is. I'm off to do bits in the hot tub with that hunky little snack from Turkey. All the other girls were like, "Babes, why do you go for bad boys?" And I'm like, "Babes, I need someone who excites me and who still has access to large quantities of Agent Orange. I need to freshen up my spray tan. Don't wait up."
Despite America's failure to elect a woman president, for many, the 2010s was the decade when women were finally heard.
This came as a shock to Jacob Rees-Mogg, leader of the House of Commons and professional snob.
"When I first heard the news that women actually exist, I nearly choked on my foie gras."
Mr. Rees-Mogg, women have existed for millions of years.
"Well, that's what a few radical feminists are claiming. But throughout my life, from my school days to the time when I met captains of industry and heads of state, if I had seen a woman, I would have jumped out of my skin. And now they seem to be everywhere, doing some of the same things as men, although I'm pleased to say not for the same money."
Haven't you simply refused to acknowledge the contribution and potential of women up till now?
"Oh, absolutely not. And if I may say, Mr. Mateless, I find that accusation quite a offensive.
Mr. Rees-Mogg, thank you.
Most sane people agree that the rise of women was one of the few positive aspects of the decade. We ask Kirsty Walk to find out more.
Thank you, Nick. A panel of experts have chosen the decade's most influential woman from a very, very long list, including Greta Thunberg, Malala Yousafzai, and Rose McGowan. But the unanimous choice as winner for her outstanding contribution to British political discourse is Brenda from Bristol.
You're joking. Not another one?
Brenda encapsulated the feelings of a whole nation in 2017, but she also epitomised our feelings about so many events of the decade. Tax avoidance scandals.
Not another one!
Sitcoms starring Ricky Gervais.
Not another one!
Irritating wankers appearing on The Apprentice.
Not another one!
Brexit deals.
Not another one!
Sex abuse scandals.
Not another one!
Twists in line of duty.
Not another one!
Conservative prime ministers resigning in tears.
Not... Actually, I wouldn't mind another one of those.
More on that story later. You're listening to Radio 4's Look Back at the 2010s.
For many people, it was David Cameron's decision to call a referendum that was the defining moment of the last 10 years. Emily went to speak to the former Prime Minister about that fateful decision.
Mr. Cameron, we're here in the palatial surroundings of your shepherd's hut, where I believe you're writing a follow-up to your memoirs focusing on your early life.
That's right, Emily. It's called David Cameron and the Piglet of Fire.
So with the benefit of hindsight, do you regret calling the EU referendum?
I have absolutely no recollection of doing that whatsoever.
You don't remember calling a referendum for the 23rd of June 2016?
Well, look, that couldn't have happened because, I happen to know on that particular day I was at Pizza Express in Woking.
And why do you especially remember that?
Because it was a very unusual event for me in that I took my children to an eatery and didn't leave any of them there.
Mr. Cameron, you took a decision which has arguably wrecked this country and you say you can't remember it.
No. And without putting too fine a point of it, if you're a man, screwing the country is a positive act. So if I had done that, I'd definitely remember.
Do you regret your friendship with notorious Eurosceptic Jacob Rees-Mogg?
No. Look, he enabled me to meet a number of fascinating and insane people. And there was absolutely no indication at the time that he was involved in anything, shall we say, unbecoming.
Unbecoming? He was a member of the ERG.
Sorry, yes, I was being polite.
Finally, then, do you have any sense of guilt, regret, or shame?
No, but that's because I actually have a peculiar medical condition. You see, earlier in my life, I received an overdose of privilege, which tragically has left me clinically incapable of giving a shit about anything.
David Cameron, thank you.
The boom in social media in the last decade was fertile ground for conspiracy theories.
The biggest conspiracy theory emerged from Britain and involved a woman called Theresa May. It claimed that Theresa May had been Prime Minister of Britain from 2016 to 2019.
After much detective work, we managed to track down this Theresa May person to her current address in Epping Forest. She's living in a hut made of twigs and papier-mâché, made up of old EU withdrawal agreements.
They say I was what?
They say that you were Conservative Prime Minister of Britain for 3 years. Ring any bells?
No, please don't carry on. It's too painful to remember.
Come on, face your fears. Rack your brains. If it helps, I am wearing my huge hypno glasses and I can regress you into your past life.
Oh, yes. Yes. I'm getting vague flashes. No, don't send me back. I can't face it. I can't face the darkness.
Yes, you can. Go deeper.
Oh, I remember. Podiums. Lots of podiums. I remember shouting at a wizened old man in a big church full of estate agents and a crazy man with blonde hair. I remember standing in empty factories waving and smiling to thin air. Nothing has changed. Nothing has changed.
Come back now, Teresa. Come back. Come back. No, you're back in the room.
Oh, I remember a word. Brexit. Does that mean anything at all?
Absolutely nothing. Sorry to have bothered you.
And yet, despite this wild conspiracy theory being debunked, still they come, with the latest doing the rounds on Facebook claiming an obscure B&Q employee named Jeremy led the Labour Party for nearly 5 years.
Looking back over the decade, one particular phenomenon has come in for significant criticism. Social media.
The world of social media can be a horrible place, be it a rise in hate speech, Russian election interference, or your Auntie Lynn posting memes that say, I always cook with wine, sometimes I even put it in the food. Lol. We're joined in the studio now by media mogul Rupert Murdoch.
Social media. Social media. Whatever happened to the good old normal media? Whatever was wrong with the media being all nice pairs of jiggly tits and hacking into the voicemails of murder victims? It was so innocent then.
But what about social media's proliferation of disinformation and election rigging?
I know. Isn't it awful? That's my bloody job. Right, I'm off. Going to watch another episode of Succession. It's all about this monstrous media mogul and his appalling children. Where do these people get their ideas from? I just don't know.
As it's Christmas, we don't want to leave listeners with a feeling of doom and gloom. So here's a trailer for a heartwarming new podcast.
To mark the end of the decade, BBC Sounds presents Penelope Wilton Makes the 2010s Sound Lovely.
Sorry, I do what?
You make the 2010s sound lovely. Penelope, that is what you do. Come on.
Oh, right, OK, fair point. I'll make the 2010s sound lovely. No, sod it, you're on your own.
As we come to the end of the decade, we can at least acknowledge that it was 10 years of great change. We started with the economy in the toilet and the election of an old Etonian promising happy days.
And ended with the economy in the toilet and the election of an old Etonian promising happy days.
We're so screwed, aren't we?
Yep.
Oh, well, let's stay positive. Maybe the 2030s will be a giggle. Good night.
Ringers End of the Decade Special was performed by John Culshaw, Lewis MacLeod, Jan Ravens, Deborah Stevenson and Duncan Wisby. The writers were Neff Fountain and Tom Jameson, Lawrence Howard, Ed Amsden and Tom Coles, and Sarah Campbell. It was a BBC Studios production, and the producer and creator was Bill Dare.
Henry Akeley disappeared from his home on the edge of Rendlesham Forest somewhere around the end of June 2019.
They come every night now. The police don't believe me. Now, please, I just need you to get in touch.
What we uncovered is a mystery that has sent us deep into England's past. To an area steeped in witchcraft, the occult, secret government operations.
Now we have multiple sites of 5 lights with a similar shape, Robert.
And something that might indeed be altogether otherworldly. This is The Whisperer in Darkness.
Available now on BBC Sounds.
At Origin, we know moving houses. You try to hire a truck, but the trucks are booked out. The friend with the ute is out of town, the other friend is in town, but you're not really friends. Then you forget the key and run out of tape. Thankfully, after 3 trips, 2 broken plates and 1 long, hard look in the mirror, you can turn the lights on. Because at Origin, we can help you get moving in no time with our dedicated movers hotline or a quick online sign-up. Phew! Call 13MOVE or search Origin Moves. Origin. Good energy. Residential electricity customers only. Availability criteria apply.